My name is Courtney Powell, and my favorite movie is Pride and Prejudice.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into another episode of My Favorite Movie Is. Today we are joined by Courtney Powell. Courtney lives in Denver, Colorado, and she's joining us very late at night. Don't ever say this isn't the hardest working podcast in showbiz. We are. But Courtney, thank you for joining us. If you would, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So as previously stated, my name is Courtney Powell. I'm married to Matt, and we have two kids, Addie and Lottie, dog Lucy. Yeah, we live in just west of Denver, Colorado. We love it out here, and I like to watch movies. I'm not as much of a movie person as either of you, but I do like them. Actually, more than watching movies, I like to read books. So,
Courtney, so your favorite movie is Pride and Prejudice. Give us your synopsis of Pride and Prejudice.
Okay, I've been thinking about how to summarize Pride and Prejudice because I don't want to get too in the weeds. But basically, the whole story, the reason why it's called Pride and Prejudice is because it's a love story about a girl who is the second oldest of five sisters, and her family is not very wealthy, who meets a man who is really, really wealthy. And so the whole point of the movie basically is when you're first introduced to the characters, it kind of seems like he's a jerk and he's not going to want to be with her. He's really cold and standoffish and whatever. So based on the title, you would think that he's going to be prejudiced against her because she's poor and inferior birth and all this kind of stuff. But what actually ends up happening is she's the one who has prejudice against him and makes assumptions about him because he's really rich. So anyways, the movie is basically just a story of their life and how they fall in love and ultimately how they end up getting together.
That was really good. I think that sums it up really well. Mitch, do you want to give us the actual synopsis?
I can give you the IMDb synopsis.
Yeah.
And I think this must have been fan written. There's like three sentences to it. Sparks fly when spirited Elizabeth Bennet meets single, rich, and proud Mr. Darcy. But Mr. Darcy reluctantly finds himself falling in love with a woman beneath his class. Can each overcome their own? You guys ready for this? Pride and Prejudice.
There you go. Wow. Yeah. Saw that coming.
They did the thing where they said the title in the synopsis.
Yeah. I don't know that. Actually, that's a far worse synopsis than the one Courtney gave us. So
thank you.
Yeah. Yours was way better and much longer, too. So I enjoyed that. Just like the movie, very long.
Okay.
So, I meant that in the best way possible. So, Courtney, tell us about your relationship to movies. You said you prefer books, but what role does this cinema play in your life? What role does it play in your family?
So I like movies. This is probably going to sound like it's a really unhealthy answer. Maybe it is, but I like movies as like a form of escape from real life. Our life is really chaotic. It's great. I mean, we have a great life. We love having kids, whatever, but we have a lot of moving parts, and a movie is a time where we can sit down and kind of just enter into a different world for a little while. It's just like a calm escape. I don't know. I think there probably was a time where I wanted to watch movies and be more critical, or like watch ones that were going to be more complex and educational. But to be honest, I just like movies that I can sit down and enjoy. I don't like movies that don't have good endings. That's kind of how I am right now. But yeah, I mean, I am not super picky. I can pretty much enjoy any kind of genre and any type of movie. I like thinking critically about things, but I think like the movies that I like to watch, like Pride and Prejudice, that I kind of default to, are ones that it's just a story that's well told. It has a nice resolution. It has good character development. That's what I like about movies. So yeah.
Now, Courtney, you were wrestling between Little Women, the recent Greta Gerwig Little Women, and sure, Pride and Prejudice. So I'm sensing kind of a theme. Is it something about this era? Is it that it's a literary adaptation? Is it that it's about females? Mm-hmm. The plot is centered around females. What is it about those two kinds of movies?
It's honestly probably all of the above, if I was just taking a wild guess. I really enjoy movies that are about sisters. I have a sister, and I'm also love them even more now because I have two daughters. And so, yeah. And I do like, I mean, they're not filmed really like at the exact same time, but I do like movies that are more like historical type fiction. Like both of these movies are loosely based on the author's lives as well. And so I like that. Yeah.
Now, did you read Pride and Prejudice first before you watched the movie?
Definitely. Yeah. The first time I read Pride and Prejudice was when I was a freshman in high school, which was in 2003. I think this movie came out in 2005.
What was Courtney as a freshman in high school like?
I mean, just like any other freshman in high school, like an idiot. No, I was really nerdy. I was really, except for you, Dusty, not an idiot as a freshman in high school. I was really nerdy. I loved reading. I loved like any kind of like book. Like I loved Pride and Prejudice because I liked the romance aspect of it. But actually, the book, the character of Mr. Darcy, it takes a lot longer to like him in the book. He's kind of a jerk in the book, but anyways, like at first, I mean, it really does. It takes a while to like him in the book and in the movie, you like him, more quickly. But yeah, I don't know. I was a nerd basically as a freshman in high school. Yeah.
So I find that interesting. You said that you right now kind of movies you use as an escape. Mm-hmm. So what do you find about Pride and Prejudice that allows you to escape? Because to me, it was fairly heavy in a sense.
Yeah.
What helps you escape with that movie?
I mean, we might get to this later on. I don't know. But I like the score, like the music in Pride and Prejudice. And I also really like the, I think it's visually really beautiful movie. Also, at this point in time, I've seen it so much that it's like, it's just something that it's like I can just have on. I mean, I don't have to be super, like honed in on it or anything like that.
It's a rewatchable for you. You can watch it over and over again and be watching it or not be watching it.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, how many times have you seen this movie and do you remember the first time that you watched it?
I've seen it a lot.
It came out in 2005. Would have been,
I was a junior. I don't know what month it came out. I was either a sophomore or a junior in high school when it came out.
Okay.
I saw it in the movie theater. The movie
are both high school Courtney. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I saw it in the movie theater. The first time I saw it was in the movie theater and I loved it. I guess now it wouldn't be as common, but like it was visually so stunning to see in a movie theater. Just like, they do stuff in the movie that I think we see a lot more now, but I feel like at the time, like I wasn't as familiar with, like, they'll have all these shots that are single shots, but the camera's moving forward, you know, it's like you're going down a hallway and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like a tracking shot.
Like a tracking shot. Yeah. Or like there's a part where she's on a swing and you're literally like swinging and then everything comes into focus and that kind of stuff. It was just really beautiful. I love the music in the movie. So yeah, I loved it when I saw it in theaters. And then obviously I watched it again this week to prepare for this podcast.
And so if you had to ballpark guess how many times you've seen it.
It's probably like, I don't know. I mean, I went through this phase when we had just moved to Birmingham. We had just moved to Birmingham, Alabama from Louisville. I was 36 weeks pregnant. I went from working in an office every day to working at home and I didn't have any friends. And I went through this phase where I watched it a lot. I probably watched it every day. I think just cause I was sad and it was like a comfort movie for me. I've probably seen it at least 50 times and I don't think that's an exaggeration. I know it's a lot.
That's impressive. I'm curious if we'll have other guests who can top that number.
I would say that's like probably easily. Yeah.
Is it a movie that's popular in your friend group? Do you all bond over that? Or is that kind of a Courtney Powell specialty?
No, I think it's just me. I can't think of really anyone I bonded with over it, but
one of our other guests, his wife, cited that as her favorite movie.
See, there
so,
you go.
Two people that we've met so far.
Well, and I will say I have a lot of friends that like Pride and Prejudice, the original. It's like 4 hours long or whatever. It's like a BBC one that came out.
Is this the one with Colin Firth?
Yep. Okay. I think it came out in the 90s. And a lot of people, that one is basically the book put to a movie. I mean, it's like exactly to the book, whatever. So people always say that one's better, and I just disagree.
What makes this 2005 version superior?
This one's way better. Well, first of all, it's way more palatable. Like, it's not 4 hours long. You can just watch it in one sitting.
If a movie's 4 hours long, immediately.
It's so, like, you can't do that. But also, like, I feel like the adaptation in this movie, I personally felt like the chemistry between the actors is a lot better. Visually, it's a lot better. I like the paring down of the dialogue. There's like a lot of dialogue in the original. Because it's, I mean, like I said, it stays really true to the book. But I just don't find that as engaging when you're watching it as perhaps when you're reading it. And so, anyways, I like the new one better.
Is there something missing from the book, you think, that you wish could have been added?
I don't think so. I mean, the only thing, I feel like they did a pretty good job, but in the book, there is more, like they do have, they kind of talk more, they develop the relationship between the sisters a little bit more, which I like in the book. The thing that's missing from this movie that's in the book is there's a lot more just really difficult. You really don't like Mr. Darcy for like a while in the book. They kind of make you like, he's just can be really, really rude. But I didn't mind that they didn't put that in the movie because I think the book takes, like, you have a lot more time to kind of get over that in the book, in the movie, because it's shorter. I thought they did a really good job with it.
Who do you think your favorite character would be then?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
So,
and why Mr. Darcy?
I did not say Mr. Darcy. I actually, one of my favorite characters in the movie is her dad. I love all the scenes with her dad. And he's such a sweet dad. I love the scene where, you know, the mom is trying to get her to marry the cousin, Mr. Collins, and the dad ultimately sides with her. And I just love that the dad doesn't pressure her into marrying someone just for the sake of money. And I think his relationship specifically with her, but really with all the daughters, is really tender. Like, when one of her sisters is playing the piano and she's like awful and whatever, like he kind of gently tells her, you know, pats her on the shoulder to tell her to stop. And she gets really upset and he hugs her. You know, I mean, he's just like really kind. I love his character. I think their relationship is really sweet.
That's a sneaky, underrated, funny scene, too, because Keira Knightley runs in the most hilarious fashion down that dirt road as her mom chases her. Laughed out loud, tears in my eyes. That was the highlight for me of the movie, and unintentionally, but really got me. I actually, in my notes, I wrote Mr. Bennett is a G. That's just such a passionate line, you know. she must choose, you know, I will not speak to her if she does choose him. Like, wow, what a powerful thing for your father to say.
Yeah.
Especially in a time when, you know, men had all the power.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be your favorite scene?
I love the scene in the library with them at the end for sure. That's my favorite scene with him when he tells her like he could only part with her with a man that was really deserving. I love that scene. I think it's really sweet. There are a couple scenes that I really like. I wrote them down. I like the scene where they're dancing at the ball and she's really mad at him. And then like all the dancers go away and it's just the two of them. And then it comes back. I really like that.
Yeah. That's a really good tracking shot. And I love how quickly they, like their jabs are going back and forth.
Oh, it's so good.
And they're
kind of
building this odd rapport together.
Yes.
While they're kind of, you know, going at each other.
Yeah. And like, that's kind of when they, I don't know. That's when you really see like the, just kind of energy between them. I really like the scene. It's really subtle, but I like the scene at the end, like whenever they're picking her sister up from being sick at the house and he helps her into the carriage and they zoom in just on his hand, just like barely helping her into the carriage. I love that scene too. Cause I think that's when she kind of first recognizes that he can be like tender or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's unpack this a little bit more. Because it's like, yeah.
I mean, absolutely electric. An electric scene. I have to read this directly from my notes. I may not be able to say all of it because I think I used some curse words, but I said, oh my gosh, that hand touch in all capital letters. I mean, I've never felt more of a spark in me in my entire life. Never have.
Yeah.
Those iconic scene from that, right?
It is. It's real. I really like that scene. I think the thing that I like, I said this to you guys in a text message, but the thing I like about the movie, and I think this scene really encompasses it, is it's like a real slow burn kind of romance. Like, it's all about like stolen moments, like stolen glances. There's never really any super overt affection or anything like that. But it is just like they develop, but somehow like you see how much they care for each other, and they don't actually even interact that much, and you still like get the sense of it. I love that scene.
Yeah, the more they withhold from Mr. Darcy, and you know, just something as small as him flexing his hand is like, you know, electricity goes through the mm-hmm. viewer.
Yeah.
And I even Googling, you know, Mr. Darcy carriage or Mr. Darcy hand. I mean, we're talking like think pieces just centered around these yes. 5 or 10 seconds of a movie.
Yeah.
But it
I love
yes, the stolen moments, exactly like you said.
Yeah, it really does. And I like the scene of them in the rain because, again, it's the same kind of thing where they're fighting with each other or whatever. But like right at the very end, when they're so close to it, like their faces are so close, the tension that they have right there. And then he tells her he's sorry for wasting her time or whatever. And you can almost immediately kind of tell that she regrets part of like some of the things that she said. That's like a class. That's like a really famous scene in the movie. I mean, that's a really classic scene, but I like it. I mean, I think they did such a good job with it.
That's the main scene that I was aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen this movie over 50 times. Dusty and I, our first time viewing this was for this podcast this week.
Yeah.
So we're very much novices in the Pride and Prejudice world. Dusty, what was your reaction kind of going in blind? What did you know about it beforehand?
I knew nothing, and I can't exaggerate that more. I knew nothing. I had no idea who the cast was. I had no idea what the premise was. I'm going to be honest, and I'm showing my cards a little too much here. Didn't know it was a book. Didn't know who Jane Austen was. No clue. I did know who she was, I think. But I had no clue going in, and I was pleasantly surprised with what it was. Watching the first, you know, 10 minutes, in my notes I wrote, it's only been 20 minutes, there's no way. Because, Courtney, you described it to us when we were kind of texting you about what your favorite movie was. You said, it's such a good slow burn. And that's really stuck in my head the way you described it, because I think that's the perfect way to put it into words. It takes a while to set up, and it takes a while for you to build relationships to, I mean, none of the characters in the movie are really great, right? They are incredibly flawed, outside of Rosamund Pike's character, who is my favorite character. I'm in love with her.
If
you hear this, please call me. they're all not great people, and it just takes so long. And then that payoff at the end, the hand scene is really where it all comes together, right?
Mm-hmm.
It all just hits, and you're like, oh, wow. And then the rain scene, and I was texting Mitch during the, like, everything that you've mentioned so far, the tracking scene in the ballroom is honestly one of the most gorgeous scenes I've ever watched, period. I love the ability that they showed right there, and the flashes of just genius that was. Is that description kind of how you pictured it in the book, Courtney?
I mean, like I said, in the book, gosh, that's a good question. It's been so long since I read the book, honestly. But in the book, like those kinds, it's just harder. Those kinds of moments are built up even more slowly in the book. And like, they're even more, you're kind of casting doubt. As they're building the romance in the book, you're kind of like, it takes a lot longer to really understand what's going on.
So it's very much a will they or won't they
romance. For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I just thought the way that they did it was really appropriate. And honestly, I feel like it's really, you know, when you think about the time the book was written, it honestly is really revolutionary that he proposed to her and she turned him down, because they touch on it in the movie. But like, it's difficult for us to understand like what's happening culturally at the time, obviously, because, you know, we're so far removed from this. But like, there really is a lot of pressure on the sisters to marry well, because that's ultimately what's going to determine like how their family is cared for moving forward. And the fact that she turned him down when she like really needed an advantageous, you know, marriage. And also the fact that he proposed to her in the position that she was in, like those are pretty, that just wouldn't have happened.
Do you think those pressures are still felt today by women? I'm serious. No, seriously. Do you think that pressure still exists?
No, because I mean, like you can own property as a woman now and you can, you know, like there's a lot more.
Good point.
You don't have to have a man to like live now. So
do you think we should go back to the way it used to be?
No, I don't think that.
you married for money. We know that. So
obviously.
How deeply I believe that. Mitch, what about your viewing? How your first time? What did you think about it?
Yeah, I immediately, and it really couldn't get out of my head for the rest of the movie, thought of Little Women. We've kind of already alluded to it today. Greta Gerwig's 2019 Little Women. And I've seen the 94 version of Little Women as well. And I mean, the whole time I'm just thinking, gosh, I kind of wish this was Little Women. And I don't know if it's because takes place later after Pride and Prejudice's era. I don't know if it's because it takes place in America, so it's closer to home for me. But I just connected with those characters and that family dynamic way more mm-hmm. than I did in Pride and Prejudice. And I think that Pride and Prejudice, I was surprised. I mean, the director this was his directorial debut, Joe Wright, who has since gone on to make other things kind of like this. He's made Anna Karenina with Keira Knightley. Does Keira Knightley exclusively act in costume dramas?
Honestly,
is that part of her contract?
It's only work she can get. Only work.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, talk about someone who's been typecast.
Honestly, yeah. She fits it really well, though. She really does.
Yeah. And I don't, this won't make sense. It makes sense in my head, but she talks like a British person talks. Like, obviously, she is British, but I mean, she talks like the ultimate British talker. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It doesn't really, but I mean, I'm tracking with you. I like to hear your
talks
thoughts.
British, no. Yeah.
No, let's I like just to hear your
end,
thoughts.
Let's end here. Let's just end here.
Good point, Zane, to wrap up. So I knew about the scene in the rain. I knew this was going to be a relatively conventional romance because it is such a timeless book at this point. And I thought it was pretty good. I was surprised at how much I liked the camera work from Joe Wright. And so I was impressed with it. It was a good movie. It's nothing that I'm going to, you know, put on my rewatchables list and, you know, fire up on a rainy day or anything like that.
Sure.
But for what it was a very well done version of what it was trying to be. If that makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah.
So.
So I'm a little curious, Courtney. Who is your least favorite character?
I mean, her mom is just the worst.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
She's so obnoxious. I pretty much can't stand her. But I also really don't like. Oh my goodness, I can't think of his name. The one that Jane isn't married. The sister that they're with, like at the beginning, the really snooty sister who keeps making all, she's kind of like represents like what a woman is supposed to be, basically. She's really rich.
Was
and
it
like,
Bingley?
Yeah, Bingley's sister. I can't think of her name.
Caroline or Carolina, something like that.
Caroline.
Yeah,
Caroline,
that sounds right.
I think.
I like.
Yeah, she was very, very judgmental, very snooty.
Oh, I can't stand her character either. But no, the mom is definitely what, like, anytime she even opens her mouth, I'm like, ugh, she's annoying. But she did a good job.
I think mine would have been Mr. Collins. And
oh, yes.
Strictly because if Mitch is one bad haircut away from looking like him, you were one bad haircut away from looking like Mr. Collins.
Here's the situation, though. He's kind of the comedic relief, too, though, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, that whole proposal is just really rough.
Oh, and the sermon, when he makes the misstep in the sermon. Yeah. He's just like, he's a complete buffoon. Yeah, for sure.
Definitely the comedic relief.
Did you boo him during the sermon scene?
No, but he just
started throwing tomatoes at the... Do you think the movie held up under rewatch for you? Do you think it gets better with age? Is it like a fine wine?
I just think it's like a classic is what I think mainly. It's just like, it's easy to watch. It's just a classic movie. It's going to be pretty. It's not super complex. I mean, it's just like an easy rewatch for me.
Yeah. And I think my favorite scene, and I love the ball scene, and I just love mm-hmm. the camera work in that, going like floating through the different rooms. And I think that my favorite moment is when she's on that cliff, like overlooking that horizon.
It's beautiful.
And it really like, oh man, they knew they had a good one with that because they really lingered on her. Mm-hmm. And that was
but what that scene, the music in that scene is just
right.
The score in the whole movie is just so good.
Yeah. Do you like listen to that on Spotify? You fire that up for if you really like need a really solid quiet time or something?
No, that's funny. That's a good idea. I don't, but I have been in a lot of weddings that have played music from that movie.
No, you don't. You're making that up.
I'm not. No, the piano, there's a couple different piano pieces from that movie that are really popular prelude songs or even.
So when family members are walking down the aisle, or are you talking like when the bride is walking down the aisle?
Usually it's like prelude, like family members walking down the aisle. But I mean, I think I actually was at a wedding where the bride walked down the aisle to one of the songs from Pride and Prejudice. But no, my background is I have a degree in music.
We should have her on the pod.
Oh my gosh. My background is that I have a degree in music and the piano score in that movie. Well, just the whole score in general. It's so beautiful. A lot of piano players really like playing it too. Apparently it's really fun to play. I'm not a piano player, but a lot of piano players really like playing it too. So.
Wow.
At what age do you think you want to show this to your daughters? Like what age do you think you want them to be? What's the ideal age?
I don't know. Probably when they're older. The thing is that like, I don't want, like I want to show them this probably when they're like in high school, not because I think there's anything inappropriate or anything like that, but I think it can be unhealthy to dwell too much on like romance when you're, young, really young. I think it can be kind of damaging.
I'll tell you what, I used to work at Lifeway Christian Stores when they were in operation, and we had practically an entire section devoted to romance of this era.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's this definitely 1700s, that or Amish. Mm. And I don't know what it is.
Why is this such a popular era for romance? Like, why are people so attracted to the 1700s? Because I like when they're walking to this party at the castle, they literally walk to a party. I can't think of anything less romantic than walking through grass to a party. What's the appeal?
I think it's that, like, it's a lot more work, like even for him, you know, there is months go by and they don't even, you know, they don't see each other or even hear from each other. And, you know, the part where he tells her like his affections are unchanged and stuff like that. I think like women want to be cherished and like cared for in a way that, you know, even in their absence for stretches of time, that those affections don't wane. And I don't think you see that very much in like our culture because things are so fast paced. We have instant access to one another and people's affections and attentions are constantly like being pulled in 1,000 different directions. And so I think there's something really appealing about just a slow pace. And, I mean, I just think that that's like a really romantic idea to think like, oh, there's a man who could have anyone he wanted and I rejected him, but like he still cares for me all these months later and like he still wants me to change my mind and whatever. I think that's like really appealing.
What kind of texter do you think Mr. Darcy is?
I think he's probably like a one word reply kind of guy.
He seems 100%. Like an okay period or he might even just reach out through email.
Honestly, that's.
I think he's the type who, although he has money, he does not spend right. He's very frivolous, so he doesn't have an unlimited texting plan yet.
Yeah, for sure.
He's nights and weekends only.
Yeah, he's driving a 2019 Toyota Camry. Like it's a nice one, but it's not anything that's going to be flashy.
Oh, it's not a 2019. It's not a 2019. It's a 2012. Okay. It was gifted from his parents. And he's going to drive that thing to the wheels fall off.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah.
Toyota Camry, good car, not a sponsor.
Yeah, well, no free ads. Do you think this is the most impactful film on your life?
No, probably not. It's just like one of my favorites.
What would be?
Okay, I've been thinking about this question. I actually asked Mitch about this today. It's just going to be a really it's a very obscure answer. So don't judge me. But the reason I'm going to give you the backstory, that the reason that I picked this movie is because it got me to change my mind about something. So I will set the scene for you. I was with my mom and my sister. It's probably 2000.
Have you said what the movie is yet?
No, not yet. Just wait.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just making sure.
She's got a build up. Courtney really likes a slow burn. So
when I am
on the edge of my seat right now.
It's 2002. We're at a Blockbuster. We're all trying to pick out a movie. Okay.
You are so old. That is one of the oldest statements.
I'm in middle school.
How did you get there? Did you ride in your horse and buggy?
No, I'm with my mom.
Relate so much.
For those who don't know what a Blockbuster is, it's where it was a store that had a bunch of movies in it that you could go pick and get some candy on your way out. So it was like a library, but for movies. So
I like that.
Well, that's what it was. You even had a little card and everything. Jeez. Anyway, so we're in there and my mom picks this random movie that none of us have ever heard of. My dad's out of town. It's just me, my mom, my sister. We get home. It's called The Life of David Gale. Now, I want to preface this with, it's a very controversial movie because if you look it up, on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a really bad critic score and a really high audience score. I have not seen this movie since this viewing of it, okay? But it was super impactful. It's a movie about the death penalty, and it's this whole story. You really don't know what's going to happen. It's super suspenseful, it's just super kind of how's this going to go? Mind you, I was in middle school. So maybe as an adult, it would not be hard to figure out what's going to happen, but in middle
and
school it
FYI,
was.
FYI, this movie is currently streaming on Netflix.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that. I'm going to have to rewatch. Anyways, the reason why I say it was really impactful for me is because it was one of the first movies that I ever watched that made me really consider why I thought the way that I did about something politically or socially. It was the first kind of movie that I saw that ever addressed anything like that. And it really overtly addresses the death penalty.
For or against the death penalty? The movie.
Again.
You'll have to watch and find out.
Okay.
Against the death penalty.
Gotcha.
And basically the premise of the movie is because... Well, anyways, I don't want to give it away, but the premise
spoiler
of the movie...
Alert, if you haven't seen The Life of David Gale.
There you go.
2003 masterpiece by Alan Parker.
Actually,
this movie is 100% canceled. The
starring
of the movie
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Yeah, we're
yikes.
Out.
Kate Winslet, Laura Linney. This movie is actually kind of loaded.
Okay.
Gabriel Mann.
So that's when it was 2003. See, I said 2002.
Melissa McCarthy is in this.
Here's the situation. It's very intense. And the whole time, it's kind of maddening because they don't really have enough evidence to put kill someone on, on death row or whatever. But he's the only option they end up doing it. Now, obviously, as I've become an adult, I realize that the death penalty is a lot more complex. But I just think the reason that movie was impactful for me is because it's one of the first times I saw a movie that really forced me to think critically about something socially. And I feel like that is true. Movies can really impact culture if they're done well, and they can impact how you think or feel. I mean, even movies like Hotel Rwanda, all these things that can kind of give you a picture of what life is like somewhere, or the cause and effect of political issues. There's really something powerful about visual storytelling that can make people have to reconsider or even face why they think the way they do. So
Mitch, what's a film that did that for you that made you kind of rethink political or social cues?
Oh man. I think the films of Spike Lee, I watched all of his major movies last year, and in kind of preparation for his Defy Bloods that came out on Netflix last year. Good movie. And Do the Right Thing was one, a big one. It didn't necessarily change my mind about anything. I think his biography of Malcolm X with Denzel Washington is really good. And it kind of changed the way I had perceived Malcolm X to make him a bit more, gave me more empathy for him as a person. Yeah, so I would say Spike Lee's movies have really, it's been a peek into, you know, Black life in America, and not many Black directors get the chance to historically tell those stories. So
totally.
Dusty, do you have any?
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind for me, I think it was probably the first time it ever happened, the Kony 2012 documentary. That shook me. That shook me to my core. And that changed a lot of the way that I see the world. And not the reasons you're thinking, mainly because it was an incredible hoax, right? And not, like, it was all false. Not, it was so overdone and publicized and politicized, and it really made me rethink, like, oh man, everything on the internet isn't true. That's kind of nuts. And I was like 20 years old at the time. That was probably a lesson I should have learned earlier. But I really do think, you know, in a joking way, yes, that did impact me, but also in a serious way, it made me think, okay, I've got to think a little more critically about things I read and things that I consume, because it's a lot of people just lie for no reason. They lie. But yeah.
So Courtney, earlier you said you only watch movies for entertainment and escape, but it sounds like,
hey,
you like them for other reasons too.
I do. It's not that it's not that I only watch them for those reasons. It's just that that's like probably the primary. Like, I've gotten to the point in my life now where I like any movie that's super, super heavy, I have to really be in the right mindset to watch it.
Right.
I mean, just because I feel like I don't have like as much emotional space to kind of handle that stuff as maybe I once did. But I still think movie.
Like, I don't think we're going to cover like Schindler's List on this.
No. Or The Pianist. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So remember when I saw that for the first time. No, there's a lot of movies like that that I just like that are excellent. I mean, that are just amazing. But I think, you know, it's a lot more taxing for me to watch things like that now.
Well, what's a movie that outside of Pride and Prejudice that you or like, yes, I could throw this on and escape with, right?
You already know what I'm going to say, and it's like Harry Potter, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I wanted to get into Harry Potter with you. I completely forgot about this.
Yeah.
And that'd be a good time to just go ahead and get into it, right?
Go ahead.
Courtney, if you don't know, loves Harry Potter, adores Harry Potter, has read all the books multiple times, seen the movies multiple times. So from Pride and Prejudice, you know, book to movie, Harry Potter, book to movie.
Sure.
Who does the better job at that?
Pride and Prejudice. Here's the situation. Harry Potter, like, the thing is that the movies, I think they do a good job with what they can do. But the plot in the book is so much more detailed and complex, and they can't even cover it in the movies. Honestly, now that I watch the movies or whatever, I'm kind of surprised that people who haven't read the books even really know what's going on, because I feel like the books fill in so many gaps. I think the movies probably have a lot of gaps. I know what's going on because I've read the books like 1,000 times, but the movies really, like, I mean, I feel like there are gaps in the movies. But I love I love Harry Potter. I love the movies. I think they did a great job with them. Obviously, once the director changed, I think he was the director for the first two, right? And then it switched. And I thought basically from movie three on, it was really good.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Is that who it is?
Directed Prisoner of Azkaban. And that's when it really kind of
took off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have listened to, I'm on the fifth audiobook. This is my second time listening through. And I'm kind of slowly doing a rewatch of the movies alongside. And I forget how rough those child actors are in the beginning.
Oh, sure. I mean, you're taking a risk.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's
tough. You're taking a risk too. Like,
for how good British actors as adults are, they're equally as bad as kids. I don't know what happens in those formative years that improves their acting ability that much. That was a note that I took, was why are British people so much better actors than Americans are? It makes no sense.
It's true.
So what was your favorite Harry Potter book?
What houses? Go ahead. Well, let me ask this first. What houses would Mr. Darcy, I'm receiving Ravenclaw for Mr. Darcy.
Yeah, duh. Of course.
He's not a Slytherin?
Ravenclaw.
No.
I was thinking Elizabeth Slytherin as well.
Elizabeth for Slytherin? No.
Yeah, because she doesn't really follow the rules. You know, she's driven by her gut.
No.
I don't know.
What would she be?
Slytherins emphasize power, and they emphasize, like, the purity of blood. That's not her. It's, like, the opposite of her.
So that's Caroline. So she would be, Caroline is a Slytherin.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
So you're going to say Gryffindor for her.
I was either going to say, either Gryffindor or Hufflepuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, those are...
What house are you?
What do you think I'm going to say?
Hufflepuff.
I don't know. That's for the sorting hat to decide.
Obviously, like, everyone wants to be a Gryffindor. Or not everyone, but, you know, that's, like, really popular. But I think I'd probably be a Ravenclaw.
I'm a Ravenclaw as well. I'm
really not that brave, but I am, Slytherin. Like, a little more nerdy, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a Gryffindor.
Yeah.
What was your favorite Harry Potter film?
My favorite Harry Potter movie is Half-Blood Prince. Number six.
Sixth one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because it takes a more dramatic turn or what?
No, I just think they do a great job. That's whenever they start showing, like, the life of Voldemort, like, they do the flashbacks. And I think they did a really good job with that. And Snape, gosh, the guy who played, like, he does such a good job with that character. Like, it's incredible.
The guy?
I know. I mean...
Put some respect on Alan Rickman's name.
I know.
Rest in peace.
Alan Rickman shines to me in that movie. He does such a good job. But no, like, I mean, that's a really good book, too. I actually think in the book series where it makes a turn is book three, Prisoner of Azkaban. That's when it kind of... The story really starts to take off. And I think... Half-Blood Prince is also one of my favorite books, but if I had to pick my favorite book, if you were like, you know, you have to decide right now, I would say Prisoner of Azkaban, because that's where it really takes off. But I think that Half-Blood Prince in the movie series is just so good. Order of the Phoenix is the one with Umbridge, and it's a really frustrating book. It's like a very necessary...
That's the one I'm on for the audiobook, and it's also far away the longest.
It's hard to get through, too, just because, like, there's so much teen angst. I think it's important because it really shows how flawed Harry is as a character. And that movie, it's like almost hard to watch, too. I mean, the deaths that are in that movie are really hard. Anyways, but I love... the sixth movie. I think they did a really good job. It's more mature. I love it.
Does the sixth movie do the best job between the book and the movie?
Probably so. I think it does the best job between... Yeah, that's a good... I think it probably does the best job between the book and the movie. It's so hard because the books, all of the details from book one all the way through book seven are important. And you just can't fit all of that into a movie. But I thought the way that they told the parts of Voldemort's story that they picked for the movie, I thought were good. They're better. I mean, there's more in the book, but I thought they did a good job with it.
What's your biggest gripe with the movies?
What I'm about to say is really stupid.
Please, we encourage
Jenny. Jenny is a way better character in the books. I don't think the actress that plays Jenny in the movies does her justice. That's my opinion. She's like such a fiery, like spicy character in the books. She's like this beautiful, like force to be reckoned with. She's super brave and whatever. And in the book, she's just kind of mousy and meek the whole time. Her and Harry don't ever really have a ton of chemistry, which they do in the books. And so I was kind of disappointed with, I don't think it was all the actress's fault. I think part of it too, was just the way that they like had that character. But, the other thing, my other beef with the movies is that the house elves are not nearly prevalent in the books. They're so important. And in the movie,
we need more Winky.
Yeah. You don't even really have Winky at all in the,
There's no Winky in the movies. Harry Potter.
There's no Winky in the movies. And even Dobby though, like they, in the book, he's the one that gives Harry the piece to compete in the Goblet of Fire, not Neville. Like, anyway, there's a lot of things. They're a lot more prevalent of characters. And so whenever a spoiler alert if you haven't seen Harry Potter, but whenever Dobby dies in the book, it's like the most devastating thing ever. And in the movie, you are sad, but I feel like in the book, but loyal though, his heart will do whatever he can. I'm reading a tweet from Dusty. I know it sounds silly, but I think I resonate with Dobby more than any other character. Relate to him immensely. I'm aloof at times, lacks social awareness at times, but loyal with all his heart, will do whatever he can for those he's closest to and longs to be loved. Honestly, that's him. And like in the books, he's
definitely an Enneagram too.
Oh, for sure. 100%. And in the books, you just love him so much. Like he's everywhere in the books. I felt like he could have been more present in the movies.
Dobby.
That's the only British I'll do. have you seen the Harry Potter series more than you've seen Pride and Prejudice?
No, just because there's so many more of them. But I do. The Harry Potter really is something like when I'm just working from home on the couch or whatever, I'll just put it on just to have something on.
Do you all have the physical DVDs or Blu-rays?
No, we bought them all on iTunes. They were having like a sale and we bought them all one time.
The movie snobs just rolled over in their graves hearing you say that. that's tough. Sorry. For them here. They're Sorry. Down. They're down bad.
Sorry.
I was going to say. I had another Harry Potter question and I lost it.
I don't know.
Anyway,
you want to talk movie theaters?
Yes, I do after this. So what would you say? I lost it again. Oh, what would you say is the best adaptation from a book that you've seen into a film?
Oh man, that's hard. I really liked the way that they did Gatsby. I thought that was really good. I thought that was a really good...
Which one?
The one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, okay.
I thought they did a good job with that. I think if I'm thinking even like from childhood, like some classic books, Where the Redford Grows, I feel like they did a really good job between the book and the movie. I know that's really obscure.
No, that's so good. Fourth grade Dusty crying right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd put Where the Red Fern Grows. It's either that or probably The Godfather.
Fun fact, Where the Red Fern Grows is the last book I read. And that was in 98. No.
Come on. You had to have read at least The Hunger Games, the first one. Everybody read that. True.
Yes. No.
The first 1.5 Hunger Games books.
Everybody read it.
It's true. He's not wrong.
And like every middle-aged woman read Gone Girl and like Where the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh my gosh.
Not Where the Dragon Tattoo. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
My mom read Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And
everyone's mom read Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
When it came out in theaters for Christmas that year, she was like, I don't really want anything. I just want to go see this movie with you guys. And my brother and I had
demented.
We had no clue. And so the next thing you know, it's, you know, my brother, my mom, and me, we're sandwiching her, and there's this graphic rape scene that comes on.
Oh, I haven't ever seen it.
Oh my gosh, do not watch it with your kids. Don't watch it in general.
Okay.
It's fine. But
yeah, I would. Yeah. If you have 3 to 6 year olds, don't watch David Fincher's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Wait, I have something to say about Gone Girl. This is my beef with Gone Girl.
Okay.
The books.
Great, in my mind, great literary adaptation.
Let me tell you something. Here's the thing. In the movie, they give you way more hints than they do in the book. In the book, spoiler alert for Gone Girl, it's been out for a while, so I don't feel bad for you if this spoils this for you. In the book, when you get to the chapter and it is her talking, you are shocked. Like, I read the book right when it came out, and I did not know. I mean, I was like, it takes a lot to surprise me in a book because I feel like I'm always like trying to figure stuff out. I was shocked that she was alive. Like, it took a total turn there. In the movies, they totally are giving it away. In the movie, they're giving it away like the whole time. It's not nearly as shocking. That's my first thing with Gone Girl. Second thing, that was one of the first books I read like that, where it does like the chapters or whatever, and it's like one person, and then you read another chapter, and it's another person talking back and forth like that. I swear, since that book came out, like every new book is written that way, in that style. That has nothing to do with movies, but I'm just saying, I think that's like really interesting, because that was the first, I think that was one of the first books I read that really did that, and now like every new book is structured that way.
Every book's trying to be Christopher Nolan now. That's wild.
What book needs to be made into a movie that has been?
I would like to see a new, there might be an old movie of this that I haven't seen, but I would like to see some of Steinbeck's books become a movie. Like, I would really like to see East of Eden be a movie. I think it could be, well, I love Steinbeck just anyways, but I think that there's a lot of potential for it to be really beautiful. His character development is insane, but I think the storylines that are in East of Eden would be a very interesting, could be a really interesting movie. I'd like to see something like that.
1955, Elia Kazan, starring...
Is that the last one that was made, 1955?
Yeah, it's a good one, too.
I haven't seen it. I would like to see, like...
one of James Dean's... he only had, like, three major roles before he died.
That's, I would like to see someone who is, like, an expert in really beautiful movies. I would like to see one of the... I would like to see someone like that direct a Steinbeck book.
An expert of beautiful movies?
Like, visually. Denise,
right? That would be the one now.
Denis Villeneuve, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Terrence Malick?
I was going to say Malick. I think Malick would do a really interesting job with a Steinbeck.
I think Lowry would do really well with that as well.
Chloe Zhao. She's kind of the new Americana director.
Who directed Little Women?
Greta Gerwig.
Okay, I knew that her name was Greta, but I couldn't think of her last name.
Next movie is Barbie, starring Margot Robbie.
Interesting. We did not talk about this. Earlier on, like when I was trying to pick my favorite movie, it really was a battle between Pride and Prejudice and Little Women, because I love the newest Little Women. I thought the way she told the story was so creative. I absolutely loved it. I love what she does with color in the movie. I mean, I can go on and on and on. I loved it. I loved that that was like a big part of the storytelling.
Where are you at on Timothée Chalamet?
Oh, I'm obsessed with him. Okay. I don't know why.
Everyone in America is obsessed with Timothée Chalamet.
I don't know why. Honestly, I really don't, because I know he's very weird. But and he's very, very quirky. But I thought he did a great job with Laurie. I mean, it was a different take on Laurie, and I really liked it. I think he does a good job. What's the other movie he's in? Beautiful Boy. Is that him? Or
He's going to be the main character in Dune that comes out a couple months.
Oh, I need to read that. You just saying that made me think I really need to read
that.
He's
in French Dispatch.
Another literary adaptation. French Dispatch.
He does a good job. I mean, I know people either like really love him or really don't like him, but I thought I liked what he did with the character, personally. I thought it was really good.
So what put Pride and Prejudice over Little Women for you?
Pride and Prejudice is just more nostalgic for me. Like, if we're talking about like a movie that I watch a lot, it's going to be Pride and Prejudice. But I mean, Little Women, I loved it. I bawled like a baby. I thought that they did a really great job.
Yeah. You kind of like, your all-time favorite movie has to be something you have a lot of history with, right?
Yeah.
Like much more so than one that just came out a couple years ago. But it sounds like that's like the last great movie that you probably saw in theaters.
I think so. Right? I think so. And I saw it with a bunch of women too, and like,
a group of women.
I didn't really know very much about it before I watched. Well, I mean, I knew about Little Women, obviously, like the book, but I didn't know all that much about the movie. And I thought that the way that they kind of told the story backwards, I loved that. I mean, I didn't know if I would like it or not, but I thought I just loved it. I thought it was really good.
Dusty, you in or out on Florence Pugh?
Couldn't be more in. Could not be more in.
Would that be celebrity crush, like movie crush right now?
I would say she's very close to breaking in my top 10 for celebrity crushes. Yeah.
You and everybody.
Well, yeah, I've never claimed to have, you know, masterful different taste in women. Blonde hair, blue eyes, you've got me, okay? I'm there.
Is Pride and Prejudice, is that Keira Knightley's, like, the height of her career?
I don't know. I think a lot of people would say, what are they called that I can't think of? The pirate movies. Why can't I think of the name of them?
The Pirates of the... Pirates
of the Caribbean.
Is it Caribbean or Caribbean?
Oh, I think Caribbean. I don't know. A lot of people really like her in those. I think this is one of her best, though, personally.
So, really hot take. I don't know. Maybe not. For me, I don't think Knightley's the best actress in this movie. I really do think Pike does a much better job. I think Rosamund Pike does a much better job with the role. And Keira Knightley won Best Actress that year. And I
think she was just nominated.
And that surprised me after watching the movie and looking. I thought she did a fine job. But I really think the script and the adaptation from the book really propelled that. I don't know if you put any actress in my opinion goes into that role and does a really good job because it's so well written and it's so emotionally charged that I think you would be hard pressed to find an actress with any kind of acclaim who doesn't do a great job in that role.
No, I'll tell you something. Watching Pride and Prejudice after you watch Gone Girl is like, it really shows Rosemary Pike's range.
As well as if you watch this after you've watched Succession.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Which I can't believe we haven't brought up Matthew McFadden yet.
You've been waiting for this. Tom, baby.
I think I knew in my head somewhere that Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice and Tom from Succession are the same person, same actor.
Mm-hmm.
But when it started, it was like, it's like I was just in shock and I couldn't shake it. But by the end of it, now I feel like when I watch Succession, I'm just going to see Mr. Darcy. Like that's the sign of a good actor who kind of won me over with his performance. I thought he was great in this.
See, I've never seen Succession.
Oh, man.
Is he mean in there?
It is like...
No. Well...
Everyone's mean in this
show. Okay,
so the show is so much like Pride and Prejudice in the sense of they all suck.
Okay.
They all are just like... nobody's
like
a good person.
Big extrovert, party guy, vulgar, you know.
Yeah, that's funny.
But also, also a wimp at the same time. He has no gumption about
him.
He's very easily walked over. And so he starts to pick on... Spoiler, if you haven't seen Succession, which actually is quite prevalent because it's still new, he picks on like the youngest member of the family who's new to the business, and that's where he draws his power. And what a juxtaposition from Mr. Darcy to Tom. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
The range on this man.
This has nothing to do with like his ability at all, but what I think is fascinating in the movie is that when he first comes on, I wasn't really super impressed. I thought he was like just okay. But by the end, when he's like walking towards her in the field, he looks like the most beautiful man in the world. It's like, I don't know what they did to him, but like you just really start to love him more and more as the movie goes on. He becomes more and more attractive.
Yeah, I thought that was the biggest strength of the movie. So is this like full 10 out of 10 for you? Obviously, it's your favorite, so I'm guessing.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, no.
So we're pulling up an article from The Thrillist that says, Succession ruined the 2005 movie Pride and Prejudice
I'm sure. That's funny. Yeah, I would say this movie for me is like a 10 out of 10. I love it. I love it.
Dusty and I both came up with the same score when we watched it this week.
What'd you say it was? A 7?
Yeah, it was 7.
Yeah,
seven,
I gave it 3.5 green beans.
Okay, I'll give
3.5 out of 5.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, 7 is a good movie. That's a movie that I would recommend to people that I think was well done.
Yeah, guys, I have good taste. You sound surprised.
Not surprised at all. Yeah. No, I'm not the one who is critical of this too.
I just think it's really good. I think they did a great job with it.
Saw it in theaters, right?
I saw it in theaters, yep.
Was that your most memorable theater experience?
Oh, no. My most memorable theater experience... Well, I have two. The first one is the very first movie I ever saw in the movie theater. Guess what it was?
The Lion King.
Ooh.
Toy Story.
I was about to say a movie. I was supposed to be like Gone with the Wind from 1939.
No, it was Toy Story. It was my friend. I'll never forget. It was my friend Lindsay's 6th birthday party. It was my first movie theater experience. And I still remember that. So that was really memorable because I was only 6 and I still remember it. But the one that comes to mind when you ask that question is actually when we saw the movie Fences. Because we were living in like a really diverse area at the time. So we were some of the only white people in the movie theater. But what made it, and so that was like a really cool experience. But what actually made it the most memorable is the movie theater we saw it in was not nice. It was like $5 all the time to see movies there. And the theaters were actually not all that soundproof. And Fences was playing right next to one of the Star Wars movies that had just come out. And so Fences has like no music. I mean, obviously it's a play adapted into a film. And so under the undercurrent, the entire movie is like this very intense, like bass, like music playing at the same time. And I just thought it made it like a very funny, just a very interesting experience. But I loved seeing Fences in the movie theater. I don't think it's even
a movie.
Did that
help or hurt your viewing?
Oh, it helped. I mean, and just the people we were surrounded by, like it just made it a really fun experience. But it's not a movie I would want to watch like by myself at home. It was definitely like a movie that I'm glad I saw in theaters.
What about the worst movie theater experience?
Kate Winslet's in it. It's about Peter Pan. Oh, Finding Neverland. That was my worst movie theater experience because it was packed in the theater and I had to sit on the front row. And that movie has a lot of like spinning camera things or whatever. And I got very sick trying to watch it. I was like sitting back. I got really motion sick.
I can imagine. I saw Creed in theaters and we got there late and we were in the front row. And about 10 minutes in, I said, I'm leaving. I'm not doing this. My neck hurts so bad after just
It's horrible. And now they have like recliners and stuff in the movie theaters that make it a little bit better. You can kind of position yourself differently, but... that was definitely my worst. I was like, oh gosh, it was awful trying to see that one in the front row. A great movie though. I love seeing movies in the movie theater.
Well, Mitch, do you have anything else?
One final question that we like to kind of wrap up with our viewers is, what is your favorite movie theater snack?
Milk duds.
And or drink. Milk duds.
And an icy. Always. Who says anything other icy. Than an icy? Well, yeah.
Now hold on.
This is a crucial question.
What's the flavor of the icy?
Blue and red combined. That's the only
another
way to do
me,
it.
Baby. Another point for me.
It's the only way to do it.
Only way
and
to do
is
it.
Is this with popcorn as well or just stick it with the milk duds?
Here's the situation. If I can get movie theater popcorn and it doesn't cost $12, sure. But if I'm going to have to pick, I'm going to pick milk duds. I do not know why. I don't know if it's a nostalgic thing or what, but I love eating milk duds at the movie theater.
You just
That's
love
the only time I eat.
Stuck on your teeth.
That's the only time I even eat milk duds is when I'm at a movie.
Are you the person that goes to like the dollar store by the theater and gets all your stuff and milk duds in your purse or anything like that?
Don't answer that. They can prosecute. Oh, well.
What do you mean? Yeah, of course I am.
We can edit that out.
Of course I am because I am a smart person. Good. Duh.
Yes.
Now, I do remember a low point in my life when I really like turned into an adult was when we snuck in pumpkin muffins to a movie. And I was like, this is bad.
Yeah. My mom has snuck in an entire Caesar salad. And she opened up the Caesar salad and was like eating it in the theater.
Yeah. What movie was it?
Probably like National Treasure 2 or something.
That's fair. I brought in $40 worth of Taco Bell one time.
How did you even have $40 worth of...
I don't want to know.
Even have $40?
Hey, honestly.
I was after work and I was just really tired and hungry and I went through Taco Bell's drive, which I'm not a big Taco Bell fan. Like it, you know, as with most of America, it gives me diarrhea immediately. Not a great thing to be eating during a movie. I think it was like Transformers or something. So I really didn't care, but I just ordered in basically the entire. I don't know how you spend $40 worth of that Taco Bell, but I ordered the entire menu twice, I think, and I still got an icy from the concession stand. Like, what a wild move. I also once brought... I was on a date with a girl, and we got Chick-fil-A and brought to the theater.
Oh, my goodness.
And this is when I knew it wouldn't work. She lost her mind and was like, hey, can you put mayonnaise on my sandwich for me? She got so nervous because she thought people around her were going to like find out. And I was like, no, you're a grown woman. You need to put mayonnaise on your sandwich. And broke down, cried in the theater because I wouldn't put the mayonnaise on her sandwich.
Well, here's my question. When was the last time you went to the movie theater when they even remotely looked in your bag? Like, I don't know why I even try to hide the fact that I bring food in there. Nobody looks.
Yeah. Well, this was, we were in the movie when this was going on. So it's like, what are you nervous about? She's like, well, there's people around us. Like, yeah, and you chose Chick-fil-A. What do you mean?
So they handcuff you and book you.
Yeah, they started shining lights down the aisle.
Yeah, we had to get up, and
it was really sticky walking down the hall. Ugh.
I have never been to a movie theater, well, at least not in the last two decades, that they look in your bag.
No. That I walked in, I saw The Suicide Squad, a month ago, and I wore like a sweatshirt and clearly had a Diet Dr. Pepper can in my like sweatshirt. The worst thing I've ever...
Not just the can, they're like, that's Diet Dr. Pepper.
Right, like, we can clearly... You're wearing a translucent sweatshirt. We can clearly see. So I was... When I was living in Pikeville, I was probably a junior in high school, and we went to see some movie at the theater, The Riverfield 10, if anybody's interested in the cinema's name. Great movie theater. So we go to walk in, and the movie before us had just gotten out. There wasn't much of an overturn to clean. So as we're walking in, my friend Ben points out that there's a full sitting on top. There's a full tub of a large popcorn, and I
please don't tell me this.
I took a look at it, and I looked at Ben. And I was like, "That's silly," and he was like, "Yeah, that'd be crazy." I've never been so full on popcorn in my life.
Oh my gosh, that's disgusting. COVID started.
Now hold on. There wasn't much taken out, if any. It was maybe a handful. Like, why would you just waste an entire large popcorn?
Those hands could have been soaked in urine. I mean, you don't know why they didn't eat that
soaked
popcorn.
In urine. How many times have you seen a hand soaked in urine?
I don't know, but I'm not going to stick my hand in an unknown popcorn bucket.
Well, I've done it there, and I've done it at Buffalo Wild Wings. I took wings off of somebody's plate after they left the table.
Gosh, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, this feels like as good a place to land this plane as any.
It's late. Courtney, this was a lot of fun. Seriously, I was a little, to be honest, a little nervous about talking about Pride and Prejudice because, like you said, it's a slow
burn.
Pride
and Prejudice.
But my gosh, was this podcast just like Pride and Prejudice, such a slow burn. It started off and kept getting better and finally ended with a...
us proclaiming our ardent love for one another and for movie theaters.
Me with Mr. Darcy and Tom just
yeah, I hope everyone walks away with images of hands soaked in urine.
That's an image. The hands, Mr. Darcy's hand soaked in urine. And that's why he's clenching it. That's why he's clenching it. Because he's like, oh gosh, she peed on me.
Make it end.
You're welcome, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Courtney, seriously, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for talking with us. Shout out to our sponsor, One Oak Wedding Venue. Our editor, Matthew Powell. From Mitch Wiley, I'm Dusty Koshreza, and this has been My Favorite Movie Is.
Have a good week. Be kind and rewind.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode was brought to you by One Oak Event Venue. One Oak Event Venue is a wedding venue, event venue located in Nicholasville, Kentucky, on the Fayette County line in Jessamine County, Kentucky. Turn your one-of-a-kind dream into a reality. Call 859-888-0591 or 859-MORE-ART. That's 859-MORE-ART. One of a kind event venue.